Hey, it's that time again for the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Here we go, season five tipping off. And if you're counting at home, this is episode number 108 overall. I'm your host, Brian DeNovellis. Thank you as all for downloading and listening to us wherever you get your podcast. Hope you had an awesome summer. Look, I know I did. As far as I'm concerned, I am undefeated against summer. 54-0 and ongoing. Best time of the year. I love summer. I don't complain about the summer. I don't complain about the heat. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen and get in the air conditioning, okay? If we're fortunate enough to have it. I love the summer. This summer, my wife and I went to the Florida Keys for the first time with all three of my kids. They're all adults. Let me give you some advice about the Florida Keys because I researched it all with my wife and I didn't know much about it other than Key West. If you're looking to party and you're looking for like New Orleans West, New Orleans with palm trees, then go to Key West, all right? Because you're gonna enjoy a huge party scene. But if you want a little, you know, tank tops, sandals, relaxation, here you go. All right, take this down. Stay in Isla Mirada. It's right in the middle. It's about 2 hours from Miami, 2 hours from Key West. Islamorada. Isla Mirada, right in the middle. Stay at the Amara K Resort, and you will thank me later. Why? Because it is a piece of heaven. It is a piece of paradise. It has everything you want from the crystal blue waters to the pools, palm trees, you know, kayaking, water sports, fishing, paddle boarding, what you name it, it has it. And you're there to relax. You're there to get away. You're there to escape. There are some restaurants, not a whole lot of bars, but trust me, you can go 2 miles west and party until the sun goes down and the sun comes up, or you can go 2 miles east to Miami and have that scene, or you could be right in the middle and have access to everything you want. Isla Mirada, you'll thank me later. And here's another tip. If you're looking for a good basketball book to read, light, insightful, read this book on Ivy League hoops. Get yourself a copy of The Madness of Ivy Basketball. It's written by Richard Kent, along with a host of other writers. Richard is the main collaborator here and brought everybody together. I just finished reading it. Really enjoyed the book. A lot of light reading, great anecdotes, stories, players, coaches, men's and women's basketball. Really brought me back to last season. Princeton, remember that tremendous start they had? Including the win over Rutgers to start the season, Yale, Cornell, all at the top. It's all in there, men's, women's, really good book if you love Ivy League hoops or college basketball. With me now is the author of that book, Richard Kent, who joins me on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Richard grew up in New Haven, a couple of blocks in the shadows of Yale University. He then traveled south to the Garden State, a little bit like my path, from Connecticut to New Jersey. Graduated from Rutgers, earned his law degree from Boston College in 1975. Well, he's now an attorney, an author, sports law professor, Ivy League hoops historian. Richard, welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast.
Hey, thanks, Brian. You forgot to mention my two rejection letters from Yale and my one rejection letter from Princeton, which has to be in this.
Well, any person who grows up like that and gets rejected, Richard, there are millions of people who have rejection letters like you. No shame in that. Oh, that's terrific. So, Richard, listen, we've met each other before in our press rooms and traveling with sports. Didn't get a chance to know you over the years, but certainly you're a familiar face to me. And it's nice to really get down and talk to you. Why did you write this book? Why now, Richard?
I love Ivy League basketball. I've loved it for years. When I was a little boy, I got to see who I consider to be the greatest college player of all time, Bill Bradley. I got to see him. I would get to Payne Whitney Gymnasium in New Haven an hour before the game, either with my father or my grandfather. And I would watch him shoot, you know, around the world when we used to play that and shoot baskets from one corner to another. Many times, Brian, he never missed. He never missed for a half hour before the game. And if that
That's tough.
guy had not been a Rhodes Scholar and taken 2 years off to go to London and to play for Simmenthal in Italy, we saw that game on Wide World of Sports with Jim McKay back
Yeah,
in the day.
bringing me
His
back.
body changed. Bradley's body changed. He developed a little bit of a paunch in the stomach. And I don't think, listen, great pro. Number 24 is up in the rafters in Madison Square Garden. But I think he would have been an even better pro if he had gone right from Princeton. But basketball, we all knew basketball was not going to be in his future. Ultimately, the guy did try to run for president in 2000. I worked for him. I went up to New Hampshire and I worked for him. Unfortunately, brilliant guy, but not the most enlightening speaker. I will say that. I will call him virtually somniferous. Almost put us to sleep and did not get the, really did not get traction, did not get the nomination, but goes down in person as the best player I have ever seen in college basketball.
Listen, you're going to get some people over there that definitely agree with you. And you know, certainly in Princeton, he is royalty. He's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. So a great person to certainly, you know, talk about and say is your number one. So this
How about this, Brian? He is signed, sealed, and delivered to Duke, but there is no letter of intent. In August, before his freshman year at Duke, 30 days before, he's over in Europe on a summer program, and there is some concern about Duke basketball. I don't want to get into the specifics, but his father has some concerns. And they make phone calls to Yale and Princeton. The Yale coach was part-time at the time. Think about that. Nobody, from what I was told, nobody answered the phone in the office. The Princeton coach was not Butch Van Breda-Cloff yet. It was KP Capon. Either he or somebody in his office answered it, and the rest is history. Bradley ends up at Princeton.
Yeah, and imagine if he had played 4 years, you know, back then, right? They only played three.
Correct. And
So,
no 3-point.
right. Another facet of the game that has totally revolutionized it. So, what made this year so special in your eyes in the Ivy
Three
League?
really, really good teams on the top of the Ivy. Cornell, Princeton, and Yale. Two really, really, really good teams on the top of the women. Princeton, coached by Carla Berube, a former UConn star. And Columbia, coached by who I think is the biggest rising star in women's basketball, Megan Griffith. And I just had the feeling that the year would be special, competitive. And come December, and you mentioned this, Brian, early on, come December, Princeton's undefeated. They're about to play St. Joe's. I thought Yale was better, even in December. And I'm anticipating, is this the year for two bids? So I wrote emails to the selection committee in December. I said, you guys have to watch Princeton. I actually got a response from the chair of the selection committee, who is the commissioner of the SWAC. And he said, duly noted, something like that. Princeton then loses at St. Joe's, I believe 74-71 in December. They got a complete home job. Two immediate fouls on Caden Pierce in that game. And Princeton really, they had Zach Martini, who's now at Rutgers, but really didn't have enough underneath, and they end up losing the game. So I hypothesized that if they win that game, if they had not gotten blown out at Cornell in February, it would have been a two-bid league.
You know, you could really make a case in spite of those losses, right? There's no shame in losing at Cornell, okay? Brian Earl was the coach, obviously, who has since moved on. former Princeton guy.
But what about Brian Earl? Brian Earl knows the Mitch Henderson system
Right.
as well as Mitch Henderson does.
Right.
So if you're a better in Vegas and Princeton is up at, well, Brian's gone now. He's at William & Mary. But if you were a better in Vegas and Princeton is up at Cornell, especially if it's the overnight trip after a Friday night Columbia
Right.
Game, you got to look seriously because Brian Earl is one heck of a coach. But more importantly, in that moment, is as knowledgeable about Princeton as anybody in the country.
Right. It's like Henderson coaching against himself. So there's no shame in losing those games. I mean, St. Joe's should have beat Seton Hall in the NIT, if not for a miraculous late run in the second half by Alamir Dawes, who suddenly said, I'm not ready to go home just yet. Forget about metrics, right? Forget about net ranking and Ken Palms. If Princeton, and I know it's hypothetical, Richard, but if Princeton is in as an at-large, there's no doubt in my mind that they and Yale could have both pulled off upsets because nobody wanted to play that team. And they were as deserving as any, you know, seventh place team from the SEC or Big 12.
Right, for sure. And we both know, Brian, when we do this again in 5 years, that Greg Sankey is going to do everything in his power to eliminate the auto bids for the small conferences because he wants an opening round game to look like Auburn versus Minnesota. And you know how many people care about that game? Nobody. Right. Nobody.
Outside all of Alabama and Minnesota. Right.
All they care about is St. Peter's and Purdue. That's all they care about. And all they care about in the championship is having two blue bloods.
So why then were, and I know it's different, right? Women's, men's. The women, thankfully, they had two NCAA tournament bids. Princeton beats Columbia in the women's Ivy League final. And then Megan Griffith, you mentioned her earlier, pleads her case in the post game. You have it in the book and says, listen, we deserve a bid. Well, somebody was listening and maybe it influenced them. Maybe it didn't, but it was the Ivy League women who got two bids to the NCAA tournament. Were you surprised at that?
Nope. There's history here. Let's lay the foundation. The year before, Columbia is the first team out. St. John's gets in. And Columbia had beaten St. John's in December, but St. John's had beaten UConn during the season.
Okay. Carries a little weight. So that had influenced what happened the prior year. The committee said, hey, let's give them a shot this year.
We're not going to screw you 2 years in a row.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
And the Women's Selection Committee is more benevolent to smaller conferences than the men's selection committee is.
Well, here's something, and then I know you didn't write this in the book, but I think the selection committee has to be more transparent, right? 1 year, any given year, the selection committee is like, well, you need to play a tougher non-conference schedule. You're a Rutgers fan. You first and foremost, right? You know, Steve Peichel has been hammered for playing a light non-conference schedule and struggling or losing. So then teams go out and schedule brutal non-conference schedules, and suddenly the selection committee starts rewarding teams for having cupcake schedule and penalizes those teams. So is there anything being done to your knowledge over the offseason where the selection committee will be more transparent and these coaches know what the criteria will be come March?
Nothing. And there never will be. Not going to happen.
Why?
Because it's not about transparency. It's about the big boys.
Yeah. And always will be, right? It always will be. The haves and the have-nots. So let's bring it back to the Ivy League. Special year. As you break down your book, The Madness of Ivy Basketball, you take us, you know, you begin with Yale and you talk about the Ivy League tournament, and then you take us into some of the different programs from Princeton to Cornell and Harvard. And let's talk about some of the teams, especially in the tri-state area. Special year for Yale and that James Jones is the greatest coach in Yale history, most wins in program history. This year he'll pass 400, second most wins of any coach in Ivy League history. They had the better team maybe arguably last year, 2 years ago, and lost at Princeton. They come back and they don't get the repeat against Princeton in the championship game, but they win it all. Yale is the team that you've followed the most throughout your life, Richard. You know, what type of a year was this for Yale?
Listen, it was a tremendous year, but it's not an abnormal year. 2016 with Mekhi Mason and Justin Sears, they beat Baylor. And 2020, which is the COVID year, I think that's their best team. But they don't get to play in the tournament.
Well, listen, I'm not going to argue if that team was better or not, but this team was pretty special. It was a team that James Jones coached and was in first or tied for first virtually the entire season, Richard. And they controlled their own destiny going into the final game of the regular season. Brown at home. If they win, they would get the number one seed, as I recall. But they lost. Princeton beat Penn, and that gave Princeton the number one seed. How did they bounce back from that, and how shocked were they?
Let's talk about two bounce backs, because one bounce back involves Fairfield University. Yale loses to a 2-8 Fairfield team at Payne Whitney Gymnasium, and Fairfield then goes on a run. Of course, Fairfield had lost their coach, Jay Young, mm-hmm. ends up with a new coach, and that game was the catalyst for a lot of things. Yale had blown a 5-point lead to Vermont 3 days before losing to Fairfield University. So those two losses in a row were wake-up calls.
Wasn't that game – I want to cut you off, Richard. Wasn't that Vermont game that wacky 3-pointer or whatever, 4-point play at the buzzer, something happened?
Yale's up by 5 with 2 seconds left, and they lost the game. So, yes, that is the game. The shot was made by T.J. Long, who had played at Fairfield University previously. Mm-hmm. But that is neither here nor there. Yale loses to Brown. I'm at that game. I'm doing it on the radio. And I'm saying to myself, how does Brown have like a 10-16 record? Brown is too good. They've got Keno Lilly Jr., yeah. who is a tremendous player. They got two bigs up front. And we then saw when they absolutely annihilated Princeton, especially in the first half at Jadwin.
Yeah.
At Jadwin in the Ivy tournament, we saw how good they are. And listen, they should have beaten Yale. They should have beaten Yale. Mahoney makes two prayers against Brown, and Yale has a great inbounds play that had worked against Cornell and works again against Brown. So Yale gets the bid, and Yale goes on to beat Auburn, loses to San Diego State. So it's really in the Ivy tournament. Watching Brown beat Princeton and then watching Yale beat Brown, that I said, I'd been thinking about the book since February. So a month later, sitting in Jadwin, I said, it's a go. I talked to two writers from the Daily Princetonian who were sitting courtside, one from the Yale Daily News, and I got the ball rolling.
Yeah, and you documented, and chronicled a lot of what happened. So that final play, all right, was epic, because Matt Noling is somehow wide open with seconds to play and basically throws up a floater, 4 feet on the baseline to win it. Brown did everything to win that game and then everything to lose it in an epic final. How about that last play and the bucket by Noling to win the Ivy League tournament?
So that play replicated a play at home against Cornell in an 80-78 Yale win against Cornell. Very similar type play. And listen, I'm sure you and I both played basketball when we were mm-hmm. in high school and stuff. That's a tough shot to make yeah. for you or for me but not for Nolan, because that was his bread and butter shot. I mean, usually on that shot, you use glass.
Right.
He doesn't use glass. And was and that, by the way, was not the go-to play. That was option number three, from what I've been told. Danny Wolf was supposed to get the ball under the basket. Danny Wolf now starting for Michigan.
Right. Right. Big, big, huge loss there. And I want to talk about that a little bit later. You know, some of the exodus. So Noling makes that, and then they're going up against Auburn, you know, Bruce Pearl, another, you know, extremely talented team. And afterwards, they stun number four seed Auburn. And James Jones in the NCAA tournament says, I don't know if that's the best win in Yale basketball history, but I will tell you that is the best basketball team we've beaten. Which to me, if James Jones really has resurrected and brought in Yale to heights they've never seen, I'm going to go on record and say that was the best win in Yale history.
Yeah, I mean, listen, let's be candid. Auburn was not a four seed. I don't know why they were a four seed, but they were a two or a three. So, you know, Yale beats that team. And should Yale have been a 13? Princeton, we know that Princeton would have been an 11 or a 12 if they had won the Ivy tournament. Yale was the last 13. So, you know, that the last 13, you know, we know how that works. Yale should not have been the last 13. If anything, they should have been the first 13.
Well, either way, they were 13.5-point underdog. They win that game. John Pulakidas had one of his best games ever, 28 points. And, you know, just a phenomenal, phenomenal showing. Maybe something that people don't know, but if you read the book, we'll give you a little insight, because Richard brought this in there. Yale's band, as you point out, was not at the NCAA tournament. What happened?
Listen, Yale only has a $46 billion endowment. So, of course, they couldn't afford to bring their band to the game. So Yale has to use a band from a college out on the West Coast in order to get that done. I mean, that's some of the hypocrisy of the of Ivy League sports. I mean, come on.
Yeah. University of Idaho. I think that Idaho is the Vandals, if I'm not mistaken.
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
So they go there and Yale wins. They upset Auburn, and the team comes over and University of Idaho plays Yale's fight song. That's beautiful.
Correct.
And sad at the same time.
Yep.
But they did it. So you know, again, that's in the book, The Madness of Ivy Basketball, written by Richard Kent. Richard, you know, you devote some time to talk about transfers, and I want to get that to a second, you know, why they're losing players. But James Jones, you know him very well. He's about to begin his 26th season. Why has he stayed at Yale? I'm sure he's had offers to go elsewhere.
He has. I know of a major school that he was a finalist for the job. I got to say this, though. It is very difficult for an Ivy coach to get out of the Ivy League. In part, I don't know if this is really in part or just a small byproduct, but Steve Donohue, after Cornell goes to the Sweet 16 in 2010, I believe, gets the BC job, and he flamed out in 3 years. Of course, Kyle Smith has done nicely at San Francisco and Washington State, and you know, now he's at Stanford. But it is still tough for a major school, for a Creighton, for a Xavier, to tell their alumni base, we're bringing in an Ivy League coach. So maybe that's part of it. I know that James very much would like to be the winningest all-time coach. First, he wanted to be the winningest all-time coach in Yale history. He is. And now he wants to be the winningest coach in Ivy League history. He wants to beat Pete Carril, who had over 500 wins in the Ivy. And I think if James coaches, I think I plotted it another 8 years or so, I think he can do that.
Well, then you know what? There's no – what's wrong with that? Right? Because if you chase these dreams, you mentioned some coaches. How about some of the Princeton coaches? You know, Joe Scott leaving. John Thompson III had some success at Georgetown, but then ultimately got fired and then was out of there. you know, you can make a nice living. Tommy Amaker, you know, didn't do so well at Michigan, and he's done quite well for himself, although not in recent times, at Harvard. I mean, there are some tremendous basketball coaches in the Ivy League, and there's no shame in that, I guess.
Hey, Brian, who did the president of Duke University want to replace Coach K?
Yep, Tommy Amaker.
Tommy Amaker.
There was some, but somebody named Coach K stood in the way, as we've heard.
Yeah, I mean, he's a friend of mine, Coach K, and he was very nice to write a comment on the back of my book. But he very much wanted John Shire. He strong affection for Tommy Amaker, who played for him. He and obviously Bobby Hurley were his best point guards ever. But he did want John Shire to replace him.
Yeah, listen, and when you're Coach K, you can name your successor. So, and listen, Tommy Amaker's wife, you know, his wife is doing very well in that area. I think she's a professor, if I'm not mistaken. So
she's at the medical school. Yeah.
Okay, the medical school. Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, there's a lot of ties there. There's a lot of ties there. So so we touched upon Yale, Princeton. I mean, Caden Pierce, Xavien Lee, Matt Olako. These guys, certainly Caden Pierce, could, you know, and Lee could be Division I players anywhere.
Caden Pierce and Xavien Lee are the best 1-2 tandem in the junior class in this country.
I would agree. I would agree. And you can make a case that they're maybe two of the top 10 or top 12 juniors, certainly top 15 juniors in the country. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Caden Pierce is a double-double machine. Xavien Lee had, you know, a kind of an okay freshman year, nice freshman year, and then exploded to become arguably the best point guard in the Ivy League. You mentioned before Keno Lilly from Brown. I mean, just some phenomenal players.
Don't forget Bezma Bang at Yale, who James Jones never plays freshman. He never plays freshman. He turned the keys over to Bez in January of his freshman year. That's how much he thinks of Bez. And Bez is going to have, talk about another tandem, Bez and John Poulakidas this year. Bez is going to have a tremendous senior year.
I think 2-time defensive player of the year?
Correct.
In the Ivy League. So I'll jump ahead to the end of the book since we're kind of talking about it. I mean, is handicapped this year in the Ivy League, Richard?
Sure. So we have another. And by the way, growing up as an Ivy League basketball fan, there were only two teams. No two teams in any conference in the history of our country have ever had the stranglehold, the hegemony that Princeton and Penn had over the Ivy League from 63 until probably Amaker gets hired in 2008 at Harvard. So I'm going to tell you that there's another three teams this year, but one of them is not Penn. It is Brown, Princeton, and Yale. So Brown is going to replace Cornell. Cornell lost its two top players and its coach to William and Mary. I'm not saying that John Jack is not going to do a good job there. I'm sure he will, but there's still a learning curve as a first-year coach. Mm-hmm. And Brown returns almost everybody from a team that in March was arguably, you know, neck and neck with Yale and Princeton. So we've got those three teams that are going to battle it out. Would I give Princeton maybe a slight edge? Probably, because if Daylon Davis makes the jump that Xavien Lee made from freshman to sophomore year, that's a really good team. And by the way, they play Rutgers again this year, this time at the Prue on December 21st, the Saturday. So Rutgers with, you know, Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, that's going to be a heck of a game.
I mean, right, you're talking about two potential lottery picks in the NBA draft, and I really hope that college basketball fans come out to that game, Richard. I was disappointed in the turnout last year when Rutgers played Princeton. I mean, in that decrepit arena down in Trenton. All right.
Were you, probably many reasons.
And there were like 4,000 fans at that game, Richard.
Were you there?
I was there.
I was there. Okay. So there were 4,000 fans and there were 3,922 Rutgers fans, which really blew my mind because Princeton is 10 miles away.
Yeah, you could see just a smattering of orange, right? And you could count them. You're right. You could literally count them in one little corner behind the bench. So, all right, Princeton, we get it. I've been to, and you have been to many Princeton games, like you said, over the years at Jadwin Gym. They don't travel for some reason, maybe the NCAA tournament. But for college basketball fans, if you are a college basketball fan in New Jersey, it's right before Christmas. You can easily get to the Prudential Center. 9,000 fans. All right. That's what the low 10,000 is what the lower bowl fills. It would be nice to get 6,000 to 8,000 there. I'm not asking for 10, but you're going to see two really good basketball teams with two potential future, certainly NBA players, but lottery picks. Let's get
Correct.
them out there.
Yeah, and I don't know that Caden Pierce at 6'6" can be an NBA player. Xavier Lee will be an NBA player. So you've got three guys that are going to be playing in the league.
Agreed, wholeheartedly. And we saw this year Xavier Lee tested the waters and saw the process. I'm sure he heard some things and decided to come back. Let's talk about that. All right, listen, you and I know an Ivy League education can open up many doors for you. Why is it that someone like Xavier Lee decided to return? Caden Pierce decided to return to Princeton. Danny Wolf leaves. Malik Mack leaves. The portal is out there. It has invaded everyone. No one is safe from the portal. How has this affected the Ivy League, and why with some players and why with others?
All
Does
right.
it affect them in different ways?
Yeah, let's take Danny for openers. Danny was a huge Michigan fan growing up, wanted to be recruited by Michigan when he was in prep school. He did a PG year in prep school and was not. Michigan is a great school. So, listen, he wants to be. He's going to be an NBA player. He's a 7-footer in a point guard's with point guard skills. We know that. He's got the spin move. I don't know what his defense is going to be like in the Big Ten. We'll see. But I am not high on the Big Ten this year. I've never been high on the Big Ten. It is inconceivable that you could have a conference like that has not won a national championship since 2000 when Michigan State won it. I mean, that makes no sense at all. The Big East, I believe, has won 6 or 7 since then. So you kind of know in Villanova. So
Right.
it makes absolutely no sense. I think Danny will thrive, and I understand why Danny went there.
Okay.
Malik Mack went to Georgetown. Did not. Danny Wolf grew up as a rich kid. Malik Mack did not grow up as a rich kid. A lot of money was dangled in front of him. I was told, anecdotally, I don't know if it's accurate. I don't have verification that Harvard could have matched. Not matched. Harvard could have gotten him back for somewhere around 20% of the money that Georgetown paid him, but Amaker and the athletic director, Aaron McDermott, refused to do that. Tyler Perkins went across town from Penn to Villanova. He's going to be one of the centerpieces on a team that has to get to the NCAA tournament or they lose their coach.
Right.
Okay.
Agreed.
So, those are important pieces that if they had come back to the Ivy League would be a lot stronger. But Yale, the real interesting thing for me, because the Ivy League returns Lilly Pierce, Xavier Lee, Bezma Bang, and John Pulakidas. So the Ivy League returns really strong players, but
There,
they're
there's your
upperclassmen.
preseason top five right there. There's your preseason all conference first team.
Yeah, could be for sure. So those players return. What's going to happen when those players graduate? Do Lee and Pierce come back for another year? I think they do, unless Lee can play in the NBA. He'll leave if he can play in the NBA.
Right.
If he gets drafted in the mid second round, let's say he leaves, but those guys will come back. But the question is, will the up and coming freshmen at the Ivy League? Harvard's got a star who's a freshman. Forget the kid's name, but he's really good. Is the Ivy League able to keep the freshmen and sophomores? It is difficult to leave Princeton and Yale as a junior. There's no doubt about it. We know that Jordan Dingle did leave Penn. I think he was only 12 or 15 credits short of a Wharton degree.
Okay.
And I mean, the kid's not going to play in the NBA. He made a nice, pocket full of change with St. John's, but I don't think that that was a good move by him. I do understand Mbeng, Pulakidas coming back. I was a little surprised that Princeton keeps Pierce and Lee for sure, but they did. And I've heard stories, can't verify them about how Brown kept Lily, but we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, listen, when you're the leading scorer in the Ivy League and you erupt like that and you almost carry your team to their first Ivy League title, I think since 1986, last time they made the NCAA tournament, then you're gonna command some money out there. And the NIL, you know the NIL very well, Richard. How has this we've seen how it's changed the landscape of college basketball, right? It's taken all the power away from the schools and the power into the players. Where do you see this going?
Where does NIL go?
Yeah.
Oh, NIL, we're going to know in 3 weeks whether or not the house case, House was a swimmer at Arizona State, whether or not the house case, $2.8 billion settlement between the NCAA and the student athletes is approved by Judge Wilkin out in California. If it falls apart, we're going to see a trial in the winter or spring. But if it is approved, then NIL can go in-house and schools can spend up to $23 million in-house on NIL. And the rich are going to get richer, the stronger are going to get stronger, and the weaker are going to get weaker for sure. I mean, even UConn, back-to-back national championships, they can't afford $23 million. But think about it. UConn gets about 7 million, 6 or 7 million from the Big East. Rutgers, who won the lottery in conference realignment,
Right.
Rutgers gets $100 million from the Big Ten. So Ohio State and Michigan getting $100 million, and that $100 million has as its predicate TV revenue, can afford the $23 million.
So that is why we're trying to see UConn once again. It seems to be an annual story, trying to get into a major conference, the Big 12, but once again, it appears that football is holding them back.
Yeah, they're 0 for 3, but you and I talked about if we do this again in 5 years, UConn will be in a reconstituted ACC, which will lose Clemson and Florida State to the SEC, North Carolina and Virginia to the Big Ten, and UConn will be playing football and basketball against Pitt, Syracuse, and Boston College again.
There you go. Just like in the old days. It's going to evolve. And I think what you said right there kind of makes sense. Richard, you know so much about the history of Ivy League basketball. We talked a little bit about Rutgers, a little bit about the NIL, more about this book, couple of more questions about the madness of Ivy basketball. What in your discoveries and your travels did you learn about the conference this year that you might not have known, even though you've been around it for more than 50 years?
Yeah, I learned about the arrogance of the athletic directors, the arrogance of the university presidents, the refusal to even recognize the significance and import of NIL. I read the Princeton president's incoming president's page address to the Princeton freshmen 8 days ago on the quad at Princeton, and he railed against unionization. Of course, unionization is going on at Dartmouth right now and also at Southern Cal. Railed against that, railed against NIL, and made a veiled threat. Maybe someday we'll have to drop down a couple of divisions. So I got to tell you this, because I'm on plenty of Ivy League chats. My wife went to the University of Pennsylvania, and I've got loads of friends who played ball in the 70s at Penn. You tell the Princeton lacrosse players, the alumni who have won three national championships, I believe, under Bill Tierney, you tell them that their school isn't good enough to stay in D1 and they're going to go D3, and you'll have a revolt at Princeton. Okay. The biggest giving day at Yale and Harvard is the Monday after the Yale-Harvard football game. Now, I grew up in a day in which Dartmouth at Yale Bowl drew 50,000, Princeton drew 60, and Harvard drew 70. I went to the Yale Holy Cross game, I believe last year there were 3,500 people in the stands. But then for the Harvard game, Yale Bowl has been reconstituted. There were 58,000 people there. So if you don't think the alumni at Yale and Harvard care about the Yale Harvard football game, then you're sorely mistaken.
Well, then you're cutting off your main source of income, right? All of the donors. So, I mean, you're playing with fire there, no? No matter
Yeah,
what your income is.
not all of the donors. Listen, all of the donors are not donating because of the Yale Harvard football
Okay,
game, but
that's true. That's true.
right,
You're right. You're right.
but Harvard has a $54 billion endowment. If Harvard didn't charge tuition for the next 100 years for everything at Harvard, medical school, law school, undergraduate, they would still have money left over from their endowment. So,
We need to put some of that money in the national deficit.
yeah, so but I would ask this juxtaposition, okay? I live in Westport, Connecticut, which is a nice affluent town. If you're just a regular kid like you or me, and you have a 1580 on the SAT, and you have a 4.3 average at Staples High School, you finish fifth in your class, you don't have a chance
Right.
of getting into Yale, Harvard, or Princeton.
Right.
You don't have a prayer. But if you're the star point guard at Staples, if you're the number 23 recruit in the country, you're getting into those schools with a 1200 and a 3-3. So they care enough to take those kids.
Sure.
They care.
So
So
athletics matters to some point.
if you're going to take the Princeton is a top 20 Director's Cup athletic program in this country. In this country. Okay, think about it.
Yeah, that's
Just
amazing.
think about
Right,
it.
with all the football schools. Right.
Right. They are not going to abandon the opportunity to participate in crew, in lacrosse, in tennis, to have
Squash.
right there. And there was Princeton has been number one in U.S. News and World Report for 11 straight years. And by the, I got a little heads up there. It's going to be 12 straight years on September 28th.
You heard it first right here in the Tri-State College Basketball
Right. It's going to
Podcast.
be 12. It's going to be 12 straight years. But that's decent publicity. But Princeton never had the publicity it had from Sunday when it makes the Sweet 16 to the Sweet 16 game against Creighton, when Mitch Henderson became nine individuals and was on nine different TV shows at the same time. Good Morning America, you name it. He was on Morning Joe. He was on everything.
Sure.
And that was tremendous. You can't buy publicity like that at Princeton.
But yet, the Ivy League still has this better than thou mentality where they're not promoting themselves as much as they could.
You talk about an Ivy League degree. An Ivy League degree has one super important value: access to the alumni network. The quality of student at Yale is no different from the quality of student at Stanford or Northwestern or Vanderbilt or Chicago or Rice or Duke. No different. But the alumni network, which has grown and grown and grown over the years, the alumni network, access to that is what you're buying when you go there.
Priceless. Richard, last thing you want to say about the book, why people will enjoy the book?
I just think that there's so little knowledge out there about Ivy League sports. For the Ivy League basketball fans, and by the way, in the aggregate, there's fewer than 5,000, I believe, season ticket holders for all eight schools. Actually, all 16 schools, because you count men and women as well.
Right.
So it's not a large group that follows it. If you go on to the message, I go on to Rutgers message boards, there's more posts in one day on a Rutgers message board than there is for the entire Ivy season for all eight schools in men's basketball. So the interest is not there. But I think it would open some people's eyes and illuminate some people to a highly successful basketball league on many levels at the top, certainly as good as the Atlantic 10, that people just know nothing about because they're only on ESPN Plus.
Fair enough. Richard, listen, I enjoyed the time. It's a pleasure getting to talk to you and picking your brain from the Ivy League history, from Bill Bradley to, present day Danny Wolf and Caden Pierce and Xavier Lee. The book is called The Madness of Ivy Basketball, written by Richard Kent. Purchase it on Amazon or through iUniverse Books.
Or
Thank
Barnes and
you for your time.
Noble.
And
Barnes and
Barnes and
Noble.
Noble
Yep.
or any other places.
Right. So, Brian, love to see you in person. Are you going to be at Big East Media Day in October?
I will be there. I believe it's October 23rd.
I don't know the date, but I'll be there as well.
Good, Richard. I will seek you out and talk to you a little bit more and shake your hand. I appreciate the time and coming on. Good luck with the book.
Appreciate the time.
All right, that is Richard Kent. This is somebody who grew up loving Ivy League basketball, loving Yale, loving Princeton, going to Rutgers. And mutually having an admiration, as you heard there, for all three basketball programs. And you go from Princeton way back, they are, at the forefront of the Ivy League hoops, them and Penn. Yale in modern history, certainly over the last 20 years, has erupted and challenged, and in some cases surpassed in certain years what Penn and Princeton has done in the 2000s. Not only are they fantastic institutions, but also fantastic basketball programs. Check it out. Very easy read, light read. I enjoyed it from cover to cover. The Madness of Ivy Basketball, Richard Kent. And that will do it for this episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. We are going to continue with the theme of Ivy League to start this season. My next guest on episode two will be none other than Caden Pierce, the reigning Ivy League Player of the Year, returning for his junior season, trying to bring Princeton back to the NCAA tournament after they lost out last year. So Caden Pierce will be my guest on episode two. Check it out. Of course, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Become a follower, become a subscriber, continue to spread the word and tell your friends about this podcast. Season number five. Episode number one in season number five is in the books. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you very soon on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So long.